He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
So he took Sol to camp. Eric and I.
Sleepaway.
Heartbreaking. Sleepaway. I never did camp. One weekend, Lake Ronkonkoma for the Boy Scouts. That was the extent of it. But it's like a Jewish rite of passage.
It is, yeah.
So she's at camp. Here is a lot of big news this weekend. Here was the governor celebrating.
Well, we are here with good news, as I'm sure you've heard already. The nightmare is finally over. It took 22 days, but we can now confirm, as of 2 days ago, as you know, Mr. Matt is deceased, and the other escapee, Mr. Sweat, is in custody. He's doing a great job.
All right, now don't you think that that fugitive, David Sweat, don't you think that he wishes that sharpshooting cop had killed him? I mean, he managed to stay free for 3 weeks, 3 weeks and a day, despite the efforts of hundreds of law enforcement officials who flooded upstate New York. They lined both sides of the Canadian border. You know they did. The world was watching. And that corner of the Empire State, locking its doors, shuttering schools, etc. I mean, Sol's at camp in New Hampshire. It's hundreds of miles away, or at least 100 miles away. I'm sure that they were all concerned, though. It's up in the woods. It's up sort of that way.
Yeah, sure.
Finally, that sharpshooting state trooper, that sergeant, nailed Sweat twice with a handgun. Imagine that, at long range. Just as the still hard-running escapee about to reach the tree line that directly connected to the Canadian border, less than 2 miles away, I am delighted. I am relieved that no one else got hurt, not civilian nor law enforcement during those 3 weeks, those 22 days for Sweat, 21 for Matt. During that time, they were on the loose. But I do have, and I have to admit it, and maybe you do too, just a tiny bit of regret that these daring escapees didn't end up on a beach somewhere in some non-extraditable beach. At least the fugitive killer, Richard Matt, was wasted drunk when he ran into that SWAT team from the U.S. Border Patrol. Those guys don't mess around. The preliminary autopsy there showing that Matt got hit 3 times in the head, shot by a semi-automatic, the same shooter, expertly wielding that weapon. But the New York Post, I love the New York Post. They had the seminal quote about Richard Matt, the first one to go down. We believe he was drinking just before he got shot. He may have been wasted.
That's
the way to go. That's the way to shot in the head in the woods, far from innocent civilization. And unlike the critically injured David Sweat, who, if he survives, is going to be sweated like he's never been sweated before. He's going to live a miserable life interrupted only by endless interrogations. I mean, I'm sure that the prison officials, so angry, so embarrassed, they'll be trying to extract every morsel of information about everyone who may have helped knowingly or innocently in this desperate but ultimately hapless escape. They bust out brilliantly. No plan, on foot. Where do they end up? What, 40 miles from Denamora? Not even.
Can I ask you a stupid question?
Yeah.
So he's running for the border. What happens if he gets to Canada? They turn him in Canada too. I don't understand why you're running for the border.
And there's a theory. You know, you get to the border, you're safe. Like in the old days, you used to be able to get into a church and declare sanctuary.
Right, but we don't have frosty relations with Canada. I mean, I can return him.
The Mounties were probably lining the border, just waiting for the guy. That's what I'm saying. It's I wish that the hero sergeant had aimed 6 inches higher and given Sweat. I think that through their resolve, they earned frontier justice. I mean, now we got to sit through trials. I mean, he's already got life without parole. So now we got to have a trial for escape, a trial for breaking into cabins, you know, burglary, firing if they did fire Richard Matt at law enforcement, you know, stealing people's booze. I mean, who cares about that now?
Well, we get the story, though. Don't you want the sort of the details of how they, what they were doing for 3 weeks?
Let him write a book.
Yeah, so I want to read that. So he survives to write the book, and then we don't care.
Well, maybe he should have made a dying declaration. I just, I'm tired of both of them now. So I think that, I'm not, speaking of frontier justice, I'm not sure what the demand for justice, just justice, plain old justice, is when it comes to my friend. And I'll talk to you folks about any of this stuff. 866 Geraldo, 866 437-2536. Frontier justice, but a real justice when it comes to my friend for life, Donald Trump. I mean, I love this man. He really was so nice to me, so good to my family. And he is surging in the presidential polls after that flamboyant and controversial campaign launch last week, or the week before last, actually. And there's so much to admire about the guy. He's an incredible, creative entrepreneur. He's done so much to remake this city more than anyone in recent history. And he said so many great and admirable things during that announcement for president. I think that announcement and what he's done subsequent to it has helped dispel many of the doubts about Trump. And he's now legitimately challenging Governor Jeb Bush for the top spot in the crowded Republican field. But I tweeted this, Noam, over the weekend. Again, this is my pal forever, and he treated me so well. But I urge him to apologize for his crude remarks about undocumented immigrants. I mean, saying that many of them were drug dealers and rape. This is what he said. This is what he said. Here's Trump.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people.
You know, some, I assume, are good people. We have 500,000 undocumented immigrants in this town that Trump knows and loves. 500,000. When was the last time you heard about one raping anyone? I mean, it is 500,000. We have 5% of all the undocumented immigrants right here in this town, in the whole country, right here in the five boroughs, 500,000. And to stereotype them that way is so beneath him. And now Trump's at war with Mexico. He's at war with Mexican Americans. He's at war with Univision, the big network. His Miss USA pageant is now not going to run on the Spanish language network, where it was hugely popular. Everybody watched it. I mean, the Miss USA is so much more TNA than Miss America. So sterile, G-rated compared to sort of the saucy Miss USA. Perfect for the Spanish language network. Anyway, Trump's now banned Univision employees from his Trump National Doral golf course. I guess their property is adjacent to Doral. He said they can't use the property. He sealed the fence. Both sides are digging in. Things are getting really ugly. And I just wish that this is, Donald, if you're listening to me, you know I love you. I just wish you'd swallow your pride and admit that you went way overboard when you stereotyped millions of mostly innocent, otherwise law-abiding immigrants. Their only offense, really, is they came over the border illegally. I get it. They came over without proper documentation. That's a misdemeanor, a federal misdemeanor. That's not a drug dealer. I mean, it reminds me of that Congressman Stephen King who said they have big calves because they from carrying all the tons of marijuana on their backs. So I just wish that he would just say, you know something, sometimes you say stuff and you don't mean them, and I apologize. I mean, I see he's backing down on some of his harshness about Governor Jeb Bush, his wife, Melania, gorgeous Melania, is urging him to back off, right, and he's backing up. I mean, he should. You can't.
You know, he's 30 seconds into this campaign, and it seems a little reckless already. Are you still on board with him? I mean, here he is. You got Mexico. He's fighting with Telemundo.
Is different. Respect, right, and admiration is different than endorsing him. I have not endorsed
him. Right, but do you endorse the campaign at all?
I endorse the campaign because I think that he brings some refreshing candor and points of view to it, and I like that. Now, will I vote for him ultimately? I mean, not if this remains his position. I could not. I could not and still be true to myself.
Well, he was on with Imus on Friday or Thursday, and he did not back down.
And they saw him on Sunday. He did not back down. Mm-mm. Because he has a hard time saying he's sorry. I have a hard time apologizing. I mean, whether it's to the dog, to the neighbor, to, right, some colleague, I just have a hard time saying, you know, something I shouldn't have said that. And my final thoughts this morning, I want to get this in because I would be remiss if I didn't, I think it's about Barack Obama. I think the president of the United States had the best week of his tenure last week. I mean, he's on a roll. I mean, love him or hate him, he won the trade authority to negotiate that free trade. He watched as the Supreme Court again supported his signature health care schemes 6-3. And then the next day, on the 26th, he watched as the Supreme Court legalized and mandated the recognition of gay marriage. And I see, you know, they lit up the White House and the rainbow colors and all the rest of it. But here's the discordant note that I want to put in. The Texas Attorney General is saying that clerks there, county clerks, can deny same-sex marriage licenses. So we have just now begun the litigation on what the right is exactly. You know, it's all the wedding cake argument. Must clerks issue marriage licenses? I think, yes, clerks must issue marriage licenses. Must churches perform gay weddings? I think, no, there will be an exception carved out for churches. Must the wedding cake guy bake for the gay wedding? I think probably, if they're going to stay in the wedding cake business. Anyway, Texas is declaring war, as you might expect. You know, you got Rick Barry, the former governor, running for president. You've got an all-Republican administration in the Lone Star State. And now they're saying, you know, clerks don't have to issue marriage licenses. So that's going to be...
For religious reasons, though, right? So if the clerk is religiously against the idea of gay marriage, they don't have to be involved in giving the license to a couple that comes in that's gay. Am I reading that right?
So
it's a religious preference.
It's a fake religious preference.
Well, why do you say that?
The clerk's not in the clergy. The clerk who works for the government. He can't bring his religion to the
But he can't even pass it off to somebody actions. Else in the office, or it doesn't work that way?
Well,
easily resolved.
That might be a compromise. And then since we're talking about compromise.
Can I say something? Because I've been watching this all weekend, and I heard Bernie Goldberg bring this up on Imus this morning, and I think he was dead on what I was thinking. Is the media, I'm all for this, by the way. I thought the Supreme Court ruling was, was right on Friday. But that said, there's been this overabundance of celebration on the media's part, which I think has been sort of weird to watch, where it's almost been like cheerleading and not forgetting the fact that they're newscasters. And on the same side, when I hear this Texas Attorney General talking about the fact that some of these county clerks will be forced to perform these gay marriages, even though it's against their own religious preference, there has to be some middle ground where they can
get out of doing that. Not when it comes to issuing a marriage license, buddy. You cannot. Maybe you can turn the job over to your colleague next to you, but if the gay person seeking the marriage license is in any way inconvenienced, remember, that's how they kept blacks from voting in the South, by making it very difficult for them to register to vote. That's what Selma was all about. And I think that, therefore, if the clerk in his official capacity makes it any more difficult for the gay person than the straight person, I think that is illegal. But I've got to take a break. We got to get to Joe, the original J-Lo, our reporter up at the Plattsburgh Press-Republican, to give us the take. But I also think this is why I remembered this weekend, and this is my bottom line, why I voted for Barack Obama, not once but twice. He finally stood up to the man I wanted him to be at that memorial service in the packed house in Charleston last Friday, the memorial for State Senator Pinckney, when the president sang Amazing Grace. Let me hear it.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved.
Sing it, Mr. President. We'll be right back. Your calls after this.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
Mad, correct.
Gee. That's a natural sound from the raid on the resort in Tunisia that ended up killing 38 people, most of them British tourists. So scary. And that was, in a week that I think was generally filled with good news about Obamacare, you know, I'm in favor of it. I think that I know that most of you don't like it. I do. I just think that it's obscene in this country that people don't have insurance, health insurance. Everybody should have access to health care, vital health care, and it shouldn't bankrupt people. So I'm glad about the Supreme Court's Obamacare decision. I'm glad about free trade. I think that free trade is good. And I trust that the president's authority now given to him by the Republicans in both houses of Congress will be used to good effect. And I think the reaction to the Charleston, South Carolina massacre is still amazing to me. I think that the vast majority of the country united that horrible crime, maybe it'll take down the Confederate flag as a result. But I do have to point out in that regard, talking about crime, at least six black churches have been burned, all of them in the South, in the week and a half since the nine were killed in the Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. There were fires in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Knoxville, Tennessee. They're being investigated as arson. In Macon, Georgia, they're investigating another fire there as suspicious. In Tallahassee, Florida, a church fire, they're saying, was probably caused by electrical problems, so they're dismissing that one. And in Gibson County, Tennessee, another church fire may be caused by lightning. And another in Charlotte investigated to determine whether it's a hate crime. So, you know, there's a lot of work to do in the, particularly in the South, but all around the country on this whole racist thing. I mean, my only lament in going back to the what happened in Tunisia is that with all the domestic stuff that's been going on, we really have been paying short shrift to those. It was three attacks. It was Tunisia where the 38 mostly British slaughtered. France, the guy was decapitated, and the perpetrator who they apprehended, a Muslim guy, Muslim French guy, he did a selfie with the head he cut off, then he sent it around. In Kuwait, you had 27 Shiite worshippers blown up by a suicide bomber. All of these attacks, almost simultaneous. And this attacker in Kuwait had just flown in from the fountain of all Islamic evil, Saudi Arabia. You know how I feel about the people that run the kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the royal family, and they're messing around. So we have to pay attention to that. And Mr. Obama, you better not spend this week doing, high-fiving your aides in the West Wing. You got some real problems to deal with overseas. So you've got a lot of things to talk about. I want to talk to you all about it. Supreme Court just threw a bone to the Republicans, ruling 5-4 that the Obama administration unlawfully failed to consider costs when deciding to regulate mercury pollution from power plants. So, 5-4, rare defeat for the president, who had been on a roll. I'm not sure how invested he was in this particular decision. Joe Lotemplio, the original J-Lo, what a job he did from the Plattsburgh Press Republican, a reporter for over 30 years. He was out there doing the old digging and excellent, accurate reporting on the fugitive escapees upstate. Now it's over, J-Lo. So how do you feel? Do you have a sense of deflation now? Now do things go back to, writing about black flies? What happens, Joe?
Well, for the community, there obviously is a tremendous sense of relief and gratitude to law enforcement for ending this thing finally. For us, now the dirty work starts. We start digging more heavily into the investigation and what led to this whole mess. So we're going to be busy for quite some time.
What do you hear about David Sweat's condition, Joe?
This morning, I heard from Albany that he's still in critical condition at the Albany Medical Center. Still no word yet if he's having surgery or what they're going to do or how long he'll be there.
And so I am sure that that hospital is surrounded by law enforcement.
They have a secure area. They have a contract with the state to deal with inmates. So they have a separate wing, very secure for those types of patients. And that area is pretty secure. It's sealed off. You can't get in there. But the rest of the hospital, I'm told, is functioning as normal.
Joe Lotemplio, crack reporter for the Plattsburgh Press-Republican, which led all media in terms of breaking stories about the massive manhunt upstate. So, Joe, there wasn't even a slight twinge of regret when the final of the two fugitives was nabbed a mile and a half from the Canadian border. Nobody rooting for him to be the next, successful fugitive?
No, there was none of that. I can honestly say throughout this ordeal, absolutely not. I mean, these are two convicted murderers, bad dudes. Nobody wanted to see them get away.
And so the fact that Sweat was taken alive, any feeling that too bad he wasn't dealt frontier justice like his pal, the drunken Richard Matt?
Actually, the way this worked out, a lot of people are thinking it's perfect. Richard Matt was known as a very bad guy, and he was killed, so they felt relieved about that. And David Sweat was always seen as the lesser of the two evils, I guess. So if having him alive, if he can talk or will talk and, explain how all this happened, it would be very intriguing.
You think he will, Joe? You think he'll talk? Why would he talk?
Exactly.
So they give him they give him a window in solitary?
Or he won't get a book deal for sure.
That's for sure.
But he's got nothing to lose. He's going to be in for life no matter what.
No matter what. Joe Lotemplio, again, thanks a lot and great reporting, man.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Okay, Joe. Luke Adler wrote a terrific book called Chasing Bandits. He's a retired deputy U.S. Marshal, and I'm sure that Luke has some insights on the pursuit of these escapees. He joins us now. How you doing, Luke?
Very good, Geraldo. Good to be with you.
So thank you very much for coming on board. So you were a member of the SWAT team and the Marshals. I thought when I heard that Matt got shot, I was almost sure that it was the marshals that took him down. It was Border Patrol, though, a SWAT team. So you have any regret it wasn't your guys?
Yeah, my understanding was the Border Patrol. But you've got, about 1,200, 1,300 folks out there of all kinds of organizations.
So what do you think about the hand-held, the revolver shot, not a revolver, but the handgun shot at some range by the state trooper sergeant who took down David Sweat running across that field?
Yeah, good man. Great shot. Yeah, looks like
hit him twice. Two shots hit him twice.
Yeah, a phenomenal shot.
So how come he's still alive, Sweat, with that bullet hole in the middle of him?
Well, that's a good question. A lot of times people get hit, especially with a handgun round, and it just doesn't do the job to stop them. A lot of folks think that once a guy gets hit, he's down. Not necessarily so. Especially with a guy with a mindset like this, he's got nothing to lose, like you said earlier. So he's got everything to gain to stay out there and to, keep running.
So tell me about the adrenaline when you're on a search like that. Luke Adler, author of Chasing Bandits, my guest, the retired U.S. Marshal. What about how do you feel when you're chasing a live chase like that?
Well, there's nothing better. It's the greatest job in the world to chase bandits. And fugitives are all the same. Once they get out, it's, flight and how can I stay out and stay on the run. So you just have to keep focused on the job at hand and focus on your target, get your resources in line, get the organization set up, three deep breaths, in with the butterflies, out with the bees, and just focus on the bad guy and get them back into custody.
So what kind of weapons training you think that sergeant had? They say he was a teacher. But that's a hell of a shot. I mean, I know some pretty good shots, but that's a hell of a shot. And to hit him twice, right exactly where he was aiming, right in the torso. I mean, probably, I don't know exactly, but it had to be 30, 40 yards at least.
Yeah, and a lot of agencies will have their people practice out to 25 yards. Some have you practice out to 50 yards. I think some theory, some line of thought anymore is to actually with a handgun practice out to 75 or 100 yards, just in the nature of the day and age in which we live with the terrorism threat and that kind of thing. Normally, you want to make a shot like that with a long gun. However,
he didn't have one.
Exactly. So you use what you have at hand.
Finally, look at it. Like, I'm out of time, Luke, but, you know, what about the Canadians? I mean, it wouldn't have been a cakewalk for this guy if he crossed the line. What about the Canadians and their cooperation?
Well, I'm sure that, you know, as part of the organization, you have to reach out and you have to consider international boundaries. And I'm sure they were brought up to speed and that we were, in fact, coordinating with them. And I'm sure the Canadians do, Canadian law enforcement, they do a great job. And I'm sure they were hand-in-hand waiting, watching, looking for these guys to cross.
Give me two sentences. I'm out of time. Give me two sentences on your favorite takedown.
Favorite takedown?
Yeah, in your life.
The two bank robbers years ago escaped from custody. Two of our guys, they overpowered them, took their handguns out in Oklahoma. Are you familiar with that case?
I sort of, yeah.
Yeah, Connors and Darty. And there was a national hunt for these guys that lasted probably over a year before we finally got them back into custody.
Where were they?
You know, one was in Chicago when we took them down, and then I think the other was out on the West Coast.
And so the guy in Chicago, how'd you get him?
You know, they just good, solid law enforcement. I think they actually tricked him. They had someone that was helping him out on the West Coast. And once they followed him and got up on the phones, they were able to locate the other guy. And these guys need resources when they get out and run. It's very expensive and it's very resource intensive to stay out there.
Sure, you got to eat, you got to travel.
Yeah, and these guys were
a place to sleep.
Bank robbers, and they would do takedown bank robberies, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars sometimes. And they would just blow through that cash. So anyway, they had to get a hold of a guy. The feds were on top of it, did a little phone stuff, hooked it up, and then when they met, they took him down.
Took him down that way.
Darty.
Luke Adler,
yeah.
Chasing Bandits.
Pardon me?
I'm just saying, your book's Chasing Bandits.
Yeah, it is. It's a good book, interesting read. Hope you're... listeners enjoy it.
All right, man. Thanks.
Live, local, on it, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
I don't mean to neglect you here on 77 WABC. I'm going to come to your calls mostly after the news at the top of the hour. Let me squeeze in one right here from Rockland. Chris is on the line. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind? Thanks for calling.
Geraldo, I just want to know, don't white lives matter? Why was this man shot? He didn't have a gun. He didn't run at the police officer.
Don't white lives matter?
he was running away from.
I thought about that. Then you know, I answered my own question in my own mind. So Chris poses very reasonably, ladies and gentlemen. Why was David what's his name? Sweat. I'm already
Sweat.
Forgetting. You got
Sweat.
It right. David Sweat. Okay. Why was Sweat shot dead by the state trooper sergeant?
Well, he wasn't shot dead. He's still alive.
Right. I'm sorry. There's two mistakes I made. All right. So why was David Sweat shot when he was running away, running toward the border, obviously unarmed? You know, I think that the Supreme Court has ruled that shooting someone running away is not necessarily illegal under circumstances, including whether that person poses a threat either to the person doing the shooting or to society at large. And I would submit, I would certainly, this is the way it's being received, suggest that the feeling was he's a killer, he's on the loose, they've already exchanged shots with the authorities, he's making it for the woods.
When did he exchange shots with the authorities?
Well, you know, Matt did. Didn't Matt?
Well, Matt did, yes. Matt did and had a gun in his hand.
But they were together. I think that there's enough of those kinds of questions that there's not really going to be a serious inquiry as to whether officer was right in using potentially deadly force.
And I don't really care, Arthur, but I want to know.
I'm saying
Al Sharpton headed up there.
I'm saying more than you are, Chris. I'm saying I wish that the cop had done a better job. I wish that he had ended this.
Yeah, well, you
this
know
Mellon
what?
Kelly
I'm sure
saga.
There's going to be some correction officials that wish he was dead. Also,
that's. I am sure you're right about that one, buddy. Chris, excellent call. I appreciate it. So join Chris. Give us a call 866 Geraldo. We're going to pause now for the news, but I'll be back with your questions.
People got down on their knees, ready for the sudden death. into heaven for hell to freeze. Nana watched from a hospital bed. She was there till the end of the race. I couldn't hear the last words she said, but she was lying there with a smile on her face. Just a little smile on her face.
Angels of Benway. James Taylor has a number one album, his first ever. I just thought of him. You know, we drove, when we dropped Soul off at camp up in New Hampshire, we drove through Sturbridge, Massachusetts. That's from Sturbridge to Boston, all kinds of, you know, not all kinds of look for America, but you know what I mean, that song. That good James Taylor song about the Mass Turnpike. But here he is, number one after all these years, after 45 years doing it. Angel of Fenway's from 2004 when they broke the Red Sox curse. So we're asking a bunch of questions here at 866-RALDO, 866-437-2536. Should that guy, Sweat, have been shot? He was unarmed, running away. Should he have been shot by that state trooper? Should clerks in Texas be forced to issue same-sex marriage licenses, even if they have a religious objection? Personally, that's a good question, because the Texas Attorney General says they can deny same-sex marriage licenses. He's sure to be challenged. But he says that the deputy clerks can do it if the clerk has some religious objection. And should Donald Trump apologize to Mexico, to Mexican Americans, to Latinos, to anyone who knows of anyone who is undocumented, the immigrants? Because Trump has painted himself into a corner, I think. His campaign now will revolve around the issue, the incendiary issue of undocumented of immigrants. Tom is on the line from New Jersey. What are you thinking about today, Tom?
Hey, Geraldo. How's your weekend?
Excellent, thanks.
Two or three quick points. Obama singing, I'm not a fan of Obama, but him singing at the funeral was pretty cool. And I thought that was heartfelt.
It was heartfelt, was it? So even if you don't like the guy, he is our first black president. He's singing Amazing Grace. That was pretty amazing.
That was pretty good. The second thing is that it's a shame he was shot unarmed, because he was about to turn his life around. He was going to school, and then the third.
Wait a second. Going to school.
Sweat. You know, he was in the prison going to school. He was about to return. You know, he was rehabilitated. He was going to turn.
Get out of here! Well,
the third thing, real quick, is listen. Seriously, I'm a huge Civil War buff. Love it. Eat this stuff up. Read books, the history of it. Go to the battlefields, Gettysburg in particular, Antietam. I thought about this whole thing over the weekend, and I can understand the argument against flying the flag on state property, state ground. However, they're defacing monuments. They're destroying, you know, my concern would be a state park, like a federal park like Gettysburg. If you've never been there, I urge everyone, read the history of it. And yes, slavery is the undercurrent of the whole war, and not in the beginning so much, I guess, but to destroy these artifacts, I think it's a grave error.
We're not talking about artifacts. I mean, everybody is against defacing monuments. That's illegal. It's vandalism. But what about flying the Confederate flag? Isn't that the issue?
They're defacing monuments, whether they're defacing Confederate monuments.
No, I think that's lamentable. I don't like that. I appreciate Al Sharpton protesting at Fort Hamilton about the streets.
I'm sorry to cut you off. We're going to have to tear Fort Hamilton down, because General Lee, before he went to the Confederacy, they offered him command of the Union Army. So he was torn between, you know, whatever the life.
So was General Lee a traitor?
You know what? You can't put today's values back to their thinking back 150 years ago. From what I read and from what I understand, it was just a little bit different the way they were brought up in 1840, 1850, 1860s.
You fight for slavery, you fight for slavery. Imagine if you were a black person in that period. It can't. Okay, all right, Tom, I got the historic underpinnings. It's like flying a swastika now. I'm sorry. I'm over it. I mean, and the nation is over it. And anyone who's not over it, you can call me. We can debate it. But I think that ship has sailed. The Confederate flag has no place flying on public property. If you want to put it in your yard and there's not a specific ordinance against it, then do whatever you want to do. It's America. But for goodness sake, don't fly it at the state capitol and give official recognition to something that is so irksome to so many people. I mean, that's the point. The point is how it affects other people. I mean, you have a feeling about it?
You know, I lived in South Carolina. This was always a big story down there. Always.
The flying the flag.
Yeah, it always was. And look, it's interesting that these lawmakers have come to this after so many years of debate within South Carolina that the light bulb went off in their head and said, oh, yeah, maybe there is something wrong with this.
And there is something wrong with it. And they're, you know, sometimes, you know, you never know when people change their opinions about stuff. But there's no doubt but that the death of these nine people in that church will be regarded. I was just, Erica was watching movies as I was driving down from New Hampshire, and she watched Selma. We didn't go to the theater because we thought, and it really was, a kind of a predictable script that, all the black people were wonderful, all the white people were racists, even President Johnson was a jerk, and Martin Luther King was a saint. And everything got, and it was one, but it talked about the bombing, the Birmingham bombing of 1963. My goodness, look how that changed history. Four little black children, four little girls getting blown up. He have nine equally innocent black adults massacred in this church. And like the slaughter of the four, the slaughter of the nine will make history. There will be consequences. This will not go unremarked. And it was interesting. I heard your newscast, and I'm going to get to your phone calls momentarily, folks, but I heard on your newscast, now I'm talking about Peter King, our good friend, the congressman, my congressman, West Babylon. I'd vote for him anytime and forever. But talking about how the New York Times was absolutely right when it said that in terms of statistics, white supremacists have caused more violence in this country than Islamic jihadists in recent history. And Congressman King said that the New York Times was totally overblowing the threat from white supremacy, and that, you reported also about the July 4th weekend and about the terror, the elevated terror threat. And yet, when you look at the, what I reported earlier about the six black churches that have been burned in the week since South Carolina. I mean, there haven't been six Islamic extremist attacks in the country since the Charleston massacre. And yet you've had, fires in Charleston, in Charlotte, North Carolina, Knoxville, Tennessee, Macon, Georgia, Tallahassee, Florida. I think that, yes, the KKK is yesterday's news. The neo-Nazis, even the militias are yesterday's news. But there is that sentiment. There is, some, in the same way there's this freaky fringe splinter of 1% of Muslims that are nuts, there's a freaky splinter 1% of black people who are nuts, and a freaky splinter 1% of white people who are nuts, and all people, Spanish people, all people. And this freaky splinter of 1% is burning churches, apparently, even after the massacre, so I think you can't ignore it. I think Congressman King, I don't know, God forbid anything big happens terror-wise over the July 4th weekend, but we cannot overlook, just like we can't overlook black-on-black murder. I haven't checked Baltimore in the last couple of days, but I bet since we've checked, there's been a bunch of murders there. Those are issues that are real and ongoing, and we should talk about them. And one of them is, and I'm going back to Trump, Joel's got a question about that in New Jersey, or a comment. What's up, Joel? Thanks for calling.
I've been listening to you for the last week about Trump, whether he should apologize or not. I'm from Central America. I'm a citizen. I waited 4.5 years to get over here, so I don't think Mr. Trump said anything wrong about it. I didn't get offended. And like I said, being from Central America, from Honduras, 80% of the people that come over here in the last 5 years, they're usually, drug addicts or gang members, so
You really, right. From listen, I don't, I've been, obviously, I've been in your country many times. You're saying that from Tegucigalpa or wherever in Honduras, the 80% of all the undocumented immigrants making their way into the United States of America, you agree with Trump, are drug addicts or rapists?
Yep. They're all gang members or ex-gang members running away from the law.
Then where are they? Where are they? And why don't we hear more about them here?
The government over there doesn't—they don't even want them over there. You know?
I know, but they're coming here. How come we don't hear about them? You know, dealing more drugs and raping more people. If there's so many of them.
They do. They come over here and they do. You know, I don't know about raping, but they still do the illicit drug dealing. You know, it's just the way
of life.
And
you didn't feel a little bit stereotyped by that?
No, because, you know, I know some members of my family, they still do it, you know. They've been here for 5 years, and they don't get a regular job. You know, why get a regular job when you can make $400 in one single day?
Well, you know, you sound like a good source of for an expose. I appreciate you calling me. Don't be a stranger.
Thank you, Harold.
All right, brother. So that's fascinating. An inside source who says that the Honduran undocumented population is rife with criminals. If you know something, ladies and gentlemen, let me know. That was an interesting call. It is not my experience, I'll tell you that much. It is not my experience. Granted, I haven't been around a lot of Hondurans, but I've been around a lot of Guatemalans and a lot of Mexicans. And the vast majority of them, the undocumented I'm talking about, are just straight shooters that just want to work. Obviously, they want to be citizens if they can be, but they have citizen children and a lot of them have American wives. And my experience is that they are a relatively benign and hardworking, law-abiding population. But listen, I just heard it from the horse's mouth there. He said even in his own family. There are so many issues out there. One of them is whether or not David Sweat should have been gunned down by that state trooper, the sergeant, the sharpshooter who took him down with his handgun. I say, of course, he should have been shot down. But here's Vince. What does he have to say? A retired cop. What's up, man?
Geraldo, hi. Big fan. Great show. Listen, I just want to enlighten some of your listeners as to why Mr. Sweat should have been shot.
Sure.
Whether he was armed or not is immaterial. He was already a convicted felon who was desperate, on the run, and posed a danger to the community. He could have killed anybody in his path. So the officer only needed that reasonable suspicion to shoot him as he was fleeing, because he could have came across anybody and killed him. Unlike the South Carolina cop who shot the unarmed African-American man who was fleeing, at that point...
Walter Scott, yep.
Right. At that point, the officer had no reasonable suspicion to shoot him in the back as he was fleeing, because the only thing he pulled him over for was a motor vehicle violation and had no idea who he was. So in that case, the legal justification for deadly force at shooting a fleeing suspect did not apply. I would like to ask have your listeners to Google Tennessee versus Garner. It's a 1973 Supreme Court case. I believe Justice O'Connor wrote the opinion, and it states when officers are allowed to shoot a fleeing suspect and when deadly force in that circumstance is allowed. Thank you, Harold.
All right. Well, recited there, Vince. I appreciate that. The legal advice, I think, spot on. One thing I want to, before I get to your calls, and I promise I will, 866-RALDO, 866-437-2536. Hold on one sec, though. There's news out of Great Britain now. The Prime Minister, David Cameron, is promising what they call, this is typical British ease, a full-spectrum response to that horrifying assault. At least 30, they're saying 30 of the 38 tourists killed were British. At least 30 British tourists in Tunisia were among the dead in that attack last week. Imagine, ladies and gentlemen, if it had been 30 Americans killed, what our reaction would be as a nation. I mean, this is the worst attack on British citizens in decades. And what they're going to do now will be interesting to watch. Great Britain has been extremely hesitant. I didn't see any British anything when I was in Libya in 2011. There's very little of British presence in Iraq right now. You hear very little about what they are doing to combat ISIS and all of these extremists who are going back home to countries like Great Britain to perpetrate their awful violence. Britain did last year, you'll recall, experience those two Islamic extremists beheading a British cop. Now, I would expect, now that you have these Sunni Muslim extremists killing 30 British tourists last week, that by a full spectrum response, Great Britain finally takes this issue seriously.
You knew because of, and the terrorists knew because it was Ramadan, they weren't going to be killing any Muslims. They knew for sure it was going to be tourists from around the world.
I heard the guy, when he saw someone who looked like they were a local, just said, scram.
Really?
And then just went on and got the Anglos. 30 British tourists massacred. Now, what will Britain do? You know, Britain's got a hell of a military. They've got all these budget problems, obviously. Speaking of which, our stock market getting beaten up by the problems in Greece. I don't know why exactly Greece is such a big drag when Puerto Rico is a lot closer to home and their fiscal problems are at least as bad. But the Dow's down just about 200 points as this global panic spreads as Greece closes its banks. I hope this blows over. We need this like a hole in the head. Success is always great, but to have it late in life. I mean, I felt that way with Celebrity Apprentice or, you know, even some of the things at Fox in the last year or two. You know, it's sweet, and I really applaud James Taylor. I mean, first of all, he could live on his royalties from all of those great records he made in the 70s. But to do this, to work hard, to get an album together 45 years after his career started, with the 1970 album Sweet Baby James. Here he is with a hit album. What's it called? What's the name of it? What's the, you know the name?
I don't.
Before This World. Before This World. Before This World. Sold 96,000 copies in the first week. 96,000 copies. Tony Bennett has the record. So it's 45 years between his first hit and his next 45 years. Tony Bennett holds the record 54 years between his debut and his number one duets two in 2011. So 54 years for Tony Bennett. I'd love to be the Tony Bennett of broadcasters. I really model myself after those.
Well, you're
guys.
Almost there, right?
And Mick Jagger, you know, the long distance runners. Okay, we got a lot of things going on. I appreciate your calls at 866 Geraldo. I'll get to them momentarily. Right now, we have a retired cop's got a brand new TV show coming up called The Security Brief. It debuts on the 29th of June. I don't know exactly. Oh, WGN America, Reels and Lifetime is going to debut this summer. He was 30 years in the NYPD, 10 years plus in private security. He starts filming his new show. Filming it right now, I guess. Paul Violas joins us. Hey, Paul, how are you doing?
Geraldo, great to be aboard.
So tell me a little bit about this show before I ask you some real life stuff.
Sure, absolutely. The uniqueness about the show is actually a combination of its business model being not corporately owned, where we can actually tell real stories about real people and tell it like it is, and the fact that it's designed not to scream at the rain, or although it's designed to address what's affecting America's families and to provide actual, real-life solutions to keep America's families.
Well, give me one quick example. What do you mean? In a crime context.
Okay. So we're launching today with a show called My Fiancé Was a Con Man. It talks about how men intentionally target certain demographic of women in order to seek their vulnerabilities and then bleed them dry with money.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
You mean like gigolos?
Yeah, absolutely, but only on a large scale, and it happens quite a bit more than most people realize.
So what are they, like, target who? Like vulnerable older women? What?
No, actually, Geraldo, they typically target single women, typically, you know, single moms, divorced women. They look for people that have some money, but also that are vulnerable that they can manipulate. And then at the end of the show, with the use of some really incredible guests, from a forensic standpoint, a psychological standpoint, we point out to women, listen, these are the things you can look at. Here are the red flags. And I think that too resonates throughout a lot of our shows. You know, tomorrow we're going to be airing a show called Stolen at Birth, which is a phenomenal story about back in the 60s where black women were exploited so much they went to a certain hospital, believe it or not, Geraldo, in St. Louis, and were told their children were dead when in fact they were sold.
Really?
Correct. So, again, going back to the mantra here, Robin, which is really fascinating, it's that not being corporately owned, we can tell it like it is. There's no filter here. And I know
you really think that that I've been moderating my commentary because I'm corporately owned?
No, but I do think that when you are corporately owned, there's a certain amount of influence that those corporations can, in fact, bring to bear to steer that ship to a certain degree.
Well, I understand that's how you're selling it, but I wish you luck with it. The security brief. And how can New Yorkers watch it?
It's going to be airing at noon every day, specifically today at noon on Reels, as well as WGN. But today, noon at Reels.
Noon at Reels. Okay, well,
Correct. Good
luck. And today, the leading one is about the gigolos?
Correct. My fiance was a con man, is leading off today.
My fiance was a con man. Oh, good. What do you think of the shooting of the fugitive upstate yesterday?
I think superior police work all the way around. I also think that it really exposed the basic vulnerabilities inside the correctional system with respect to access control.
Doesn't it seem stupid to you, the correctional system here? You got two killers who are honor prisoners. You know, it reminds me of in The Godfather where the guy is slicing garlic and making pasta in federal prison. When at Rikers, you got people that are charged with rinky-dink crimes that can't make bail. They've spent 2-3 years there, then they kill themselves. I mean, it's like crazy.
Yeah, it's entirely crazy.
10 deaths last year at Rikers? I mean, come on.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, how many people are really looking into it thoroughly? I think that's a big question, too.
I have to credit. I don't generally like New York Magazine, but they did a hell of a job with the Rikers story. All right. Yeah. So the security brief in 17 minutes. I hope you're excited, Paul Violas.
We certainly are. And Geraldo, I appreciate the time. And, you know, remember, we want to make some noise in this. The more people can go to our Facebook page and website would be great.
All right, buddy. Good luck with it.
Thanks, Geraldo.
Okay. Elon in Rockland. Hey, Elon, what's up? What are you thinking about?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks so much for taking my call, Geraldo.
What are you thinking about?
Well, as I mentioned to your screener, basically it's like this, okay? You were talking about some atrocity, people killed in Tunis for...
Right, 30 people killed.
Okay, what was not mentioned here, it wasn't just with you, okay? And that's why I want to bring it up, okay? The fact that a 70-year-old farmer, okay, were beaten so badly on his own field, that's inside Israel, not outside on the West Bank, by Palestinian, okay, and he finally succumbed to his wound. Now, I like to say that, okay, because for some people, Jewish life is cheap, okay? I don't think so. I don't think any life is cheap here. And the fact that some of the media choose to bring some things and not some other things here, and I felt maybe because you're more of an open-minded individual, it would be something to bring up. Okay?
Sure. So this was a settler who was killed?
No. It was not a settler. It was a farmer. It was a farmer.
A farmer in Israel?
Farmer in Israel.
Who killed him? Who killed him, Elon?
It was a group of Palestinians, okay, which were not documented even. I mean, which were not there legally. You know, you can come to Israel legally, okay, but some come illegal, okay? And they came, and they, mind you, it's Ramadan now, okay, which is one of the
right.
highly holidays or in a Muslim religion,
right.
okay? So instead of going and adhering to Allah and listen to what Muhammad say, they were more busy in trying to kill somebody. And unfortunately, that's what Israel and some other places around
the world. Well, that's a damn shame. But your main point, Elon, is that the media is overlooking this fellow's death.
Exactly.
I got you.
Thank you so much for giving me the time.
All right. Well, I'm glad you got this story out. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Pete's on the line. What are you thinking about, Pete?
Hey, Geraldo, just wanted to bring your attention, and I'm not sure why you haven't spoke about it, but in Cincinnati, there was a black male who called 911 and summoned a police officer to his house, which he then proceeded to shoot and kill. Where is everybody?
I never heard of that one. Noam, do you know that
story?
No,
it's not.
I'm going to Google it right now. I haven't heard. When did this happen?
Just this past week. It was in the post on Saturday.
Cincinnati 911 cop killed. I'm looking it up right now.
He was either Korean or the policeman.
Oh, wait, it says here that the guy calls 911 on himself, and then what is he? Then he killed. I see. Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, here's the story. I got it right here. When friends were commenting on his last Facebook post Friday, and some were reading text messages indicating his plan to commit suicide by cop, this guy, Trey-Pierre Hummons, called 911, then waited with a gun for the cops to arrive. When they did, he shot and killed a 48-year-old officer, Sonny Kim, a husband and father of three. Gee, where is this?
Where's the outrage?
Is outrageous. This is outrageous.
I guess he
gave himself up. Is that what happened? Anyways, a struggle. So terrible, terrible. You know, like I said, and I appreciate the call, Pete. Thanks. Yep. Thanks for the heads up. This summer still, man, I just wonder what's going to happen this summer. Will it be about white racism? Will it be about black on black? Will it be interracial violence? Will it be neighborhoods erupting? What about that neighborhood plan here in the Big Apple? Will that succeed in tamping down?
Oh, it succeeded last year.
Gun violence? It succeeded last summer.
Last summer it did.
Last summer we had a good summer.
We did. It got awfully quiet when they instituted that program, and they instituted the program a month early this year.
Well, the question is, if it really works, why don't they do it all the time? Why does it have to be a program? Why isn't it the normal operating procedure?
I can only guess that part of it is there's just not enough officers. They're taking a lot of people from desk jobs and putting them on the street.
You wonder why they have all those desk guys.
Well, there's got to be people there to do the stuff that you do at the desk.
But all these city workers, why don't they have some municipal employee clerk?
Not a bad idea.
Clerk guy.
But maybe these 1,300 cops will resolve that problem, the ones that they're bringing under the force now.
This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
We're going to be tracking these big stories as the week progresses. But I tell you, Noam, I think that with all of these terror warnings, first of all, what do you think about terror warnings? I hate them. I hate them. Like July 4th now is supposed to be anticipating this big, as if that did anything to make us feel better or would do anything to prevent the attack that they are complaining about the prospect of.
Yeah, well, 14 years after the 9/11 attacks, I don't think anybody really pays attention to the warnings anymore. I mean, we did in the early days. Remember, they had the color levels, and people got nervous.
Oh, yeah, the colors were so confusing. Yeah. But it wasn't confusing at all. It was just stupid. I mean, how'd you know yellow, orange, red? I forget the three or four various colors, but it didn't make us more vigilant. What are you supposed to do? You're supposed to, like, look at a Middle Eastern dude walking around with a beard and
turn
say,
him in.
What's in your knapsack, Mohammed? It's ridiculous.
You know what Police Commissioner Ray Kelly used to say on our show all the time when those warnings would come out? He would say, don't worry about it. Leave it to us. We're the ones that are running the show, and go do what you're going
to
do.
But that's what you have to do. You've got to leave it to the pros. Obviously, if you see something, say something. But I think that see something, say something is a lot like the TSA. I don't know of a single terrorist attack that have been prevented by either the TSA or the if you see something, say something. And you think about the enormous excesses and how much money has been spent. I'm not saying that I want to drop our guard vis-a-vis Muslim extremism, but I think that the way we're going to fight it is with intelligence, making sure that we monitor the internet, international telephone calls, and so forth. Any known associate, that's where you've got to spend your resources. And then your police departments have to be hip to the fact that sometimes people will be perpetrating violent crimes without the old kinds of motives. Like the motive might not be robbery anymore. It might be hate, whether Muslim hate or white hate or black hate or brown hate, whatever it is. So I think that these terror warnings and the whole terror establishment that's grown up, I just think that so much of it is just spinning wheels and making people feel anxious for no good reason.
You know, it was Peter King who sounded the warning this weekend. I think we'll have him on tomorrow, so you can ask him about that.
I will certainly ask him. I also saw Michael Hayden and a bunch of the usual suspects talking about it. Thanks for listening today. You know I love you. Give us a call tomorrow. Have a great day. We'll see you.